And certainly the guest that I have this hour belongs to an organization that represents heroic principles. And so that's something that he is modeling, founded by Aaron Zelman. I'm, of course, talking about Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership, JPFO.org. And tragically, for the cause of liberty, Aaron Zelman passed away this past December. And I didn't find out about it for several weeks. I was putting in phone calls, and you can almost always count on Aaron would pick up the phone, and there was no one answering. I was trying to get some additional materials. I wanted to talk to him about that. And then I found what had happened. And I was concerned for the organization, because sometimes you have someone who is very principled, very motivated, and doesn't always mean they can draw others in and continue it. But that was not how this organization works. She did have others who shared his vision. There are heroic people still standing up for our God-given right to defend ourselves, our families, our communities. And so I was pleased when Charles Heller was able to take over some of that position as executive director. He'll be working with others as well. He's from Chicago, so he's one of those Easterners. I mean, you know, when you're on the left coast, everyone's an Easterner. But he has lived in Arizona since 1978, so he's one of those Western improved Easterners. And I think that Aaron did just the opposite. He was raised in Arizona. I think he went back to Wisconsin. He went to school at Northern Illinois University with his major in journalism, Pima College, Administration of Justice, and he proudly proclaims that he escaped both without a degree. So what's he doing in addition to representing JPFO? He is a talk show host, and he hosts several. And I went to the websites recently, and I realized I've been there before. So I had been introduced to him or his website and radio program some time ago and didn't make the connection. But he is a talk show host of the Swap Shop and Liberty Watch on KVOI, AM 1030 out of Tucson, and AM 930 out of Douglas, Arizona, and AM 1240 out of Globe. He is the executive director of Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership, an organization that, as a Gentile, I'm proud to be a member of. I encourage you who are interested in the Bill of Rights and protecting it to join as well. He's involved in radio advertising as a salesman and producer, and state-certified concealed weapons instructor. So Mark from Arizona, this is a man you want to get a hold of. He is single, but he has two successful adult children, ages 31 and 33. I think he started a little earlier than I. I have a 33 and a 35-year-old, and I commend people who raise children successfully. What are his passions? Well, he's the co-founder of Arizona Citizens Defense League, Freedom and the Study Thereof, and Perfect Radio Spots. Man, Charles, I got to be in a studio for about 3 hours yesterday. I enjoyed working on those. Hobbies, entomology. I think that's the study of bugs, or do I have it wrong? Naval history, being someone who was in the Navy, I like that. Reading and freedom activism. What's his political affiliation? We've been talking a lot about that. Well, he is a freedomist. Now, what are his favorite calibers, guys? .40 caliber pistol and .308 rifle. Enjoys occasional full auto and suppressed technology. Charles Heller, thank you so much for joining us. Welcome to The Right Source.
Pleasure, Kevin. I'm glad to be on your program. Entomology is the study of bugs. Etymology is the study of words.
Can I say in retrospect that I was trying to make a play on words?
Oh, well, you know, I enjoy engaging in polemics of pelagic proportions occasionally, but not always.
Okay, I know what I'm going to have to do. When William Norman Grigg, one of my great friends and the guy who I have to read all the time at Pro Libertate, and he will be guest hosting on occasions. He, I guess, loves etymology as well. When I first met him, I had to use a dictionary quite often, so he helped me grow in that area.
Well, I had a fantasy that one day I would interview William F. Buckley, and he would say, "I'm sorry, Mr. Heller, I'm not familiar with that word, but but it never came to fruition.
Oh, yeah.
And I never take myself that seriously.
In retrospect, with Buckley, when you really look at, you know, deep down, now I'm getting off track. I'm not sure if you're the kind of guy he would want. I think you're a little bit more of a anti-statist than he. All right.
Yeah.
I want to, you know, get your thoughts. You obviously, as being a part of JPFO at a different level than me, I was a member. I was proud mm-hmm. that the organization I was with was able to be one of many who were able to have our names on the scroll at the end of Innocence Betrayed.
Yes, appreciate your participation in that. You significantly helped us fund the Innocence Betrayed project, and we appreciate it.
You know, when I saw that, see, Aaron, there was something unique about Aaron, and he would allow me to call him and run things by. He was a unique individual to me. You know, it was interesting, if you'd interviewed him, at times I'd ask him a question, he'd answer, and there'd be a pause. And just as I'm about to come back in, he would continue because he was so very thoughtful.
Yeah, he had a lot of creative energy. I, too, had interviewed him on my programs, and it was one of the more popular interviews I ever had.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, it was one of the ones that convinced me to leave things on my website for longer. It used to be I'd leave them up there for 4 to 6 weeks. Now I leave them up there for 4 to 6 months.
Yeah, so people can have access to them. But mm-hmm. that Innocence Betrayed to me was different. We've seen talking heads. We've seen books. We've seen sort of technical arguments for our right to arm ourselves. But Innocence Betrayed took a different historical, factual approach, but very little talking head. But it made the point, I think, at an intellectual, and then for those who are less intellectual, and I don't mean that as an insult, but who are more emotion-based, it's so powerful emotionally that I felt I could show that to people who were convinced, you know, they were against guns, and it actually would make them rethink it. Did you have that sense with that?
Yeah, I did. I had the sense that he realized that sales are made emotionally, but you have to have a logical base underneath them. And if you're going to convince people to change their hearts and minds, you've got to give them enough facts and then build them up emotionally enough to get them to tip over into a different point of view. And he got that, and he was great at it. He also knew that he wasn't the guy that was going to go out in front and do it. He was smart enough to find other creative people to produce the project. For instance, I worked on one here in Tucson with him called I Will Live Free. It was an album of songs and about freedom. I wrote one of them. It was called The Guardian, and I end up using it as the theme song for one of my hours on the radio. It's I Am the Guardian of America Armed and Free. So it's a neat song. Sometime you might consider playing the whole thing. It's about 5 minutes and 50 seconds. It's a long song as songs on the radio go, but you might consider playing it on the air. It would be I think you'd find it fascinating to your audience.
You know what? I believe I have that album, you know.
Yeah.
And I think I used some outtakes from that. I didn't know that you were, you know, tied into that.
I'm the author of the words, not the music, but the words on that song. But the it makes you can chop it down to some good 35-second bits and make bumper music for going in and out of your program with it, if you like.
All right. Now let's get right to some of the obvious questions that our listeners might have. Ladies and gentlemen, once again, you're listening to The Right Source on KCM AM 1050, and we want to hear from you. Our guest, Charles Heller, I brought him here because he is now the executive director of Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership,
JPFO.org.
Yes. And so he is up to being challenged, and I know from listening to some of his shows that he's not like the mainstream so-called right-wing radio who blow people off when they come up with great arguments. One of the frustrating things about Michael Levin, although, you know, sometimes I want to cheer him, other times I want to just slap him across the face. I don't agree with a lot of stuff, is that when people come on to challenge him from the left, he gets upset. I want to hear opposing. So does Charles. 1-888-909-1050 is the toll-free number, 888-909-1050. Why an organization, Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership, and why did you see that being needed and specifically identifying as Jewish?
Well, I'm Jewish, and it's about time that somebody in my faith stopped accepting the ridiculous idea that weakness promotes peace. I mean, you know, no country was ever defeated by being too strong, and no individual was ever defeated by being too strong. And you know, I'm a firearms instructor, and we train people for what can happen, not for what we want to happen. And the same thing's true. You got to have the tools. I mean, I carry a tactical flashlight and two very small flashlights, you know, the little Streamlight Nano on me. Is it because I'm afraid of the dark?
Right.
No. It's because I know that, you know, a good eight, nine hours of the day in the summertime, maybe a little more, less than that, it's dark out. I know that if I have to crawl behind my computer to plug in a USB drive or something, that I can't see the hole in the cubby, in the foothole of the desk. So I don't quiver outside the computer and try and get the government to make computers to have flashlights attached to the back of the case. I just carry my own flashlight. The same principles apply to self-defense. You don't expect the government to protect you. And a lot of people of Jewish extraction just simply do. And one of the missions of JPFO is to destroy that mindset, to get people to want to be self-sufficient and to spread that for everybody, not just Jewish people. We want a Bill of Rights culture for everybody. Personally, I have a motto. I say I want a Leatherman society, a Leatherman being the multi-tool that a lot of people carry, especially gun people. And we know that we're ready to tighten the nuts and bolts in our own life. We don't wait for someone to come along to do it for us. That's the culture we're trying to promote at JPFO.
You know, I think that one of the things that drew me to the organization was years ago I was with the New American Magazine and some affiliate organizations, and it was when you guys first published the actual gun control laws, you know, that were passed, I think it was the 1968
Gun Control Act,
and showed how so much of it had been lifted from the collectivist national socialists of Germany, the Nazis.
Yeah, the Nazi weapons law of 1938. Yeah, Aaron paid someone to translate it, and what happened was this: Senator Dodd's father, Thomas Dodd, had been an attorney at Nuremberg in the Nuremberg trials, and he became aware of the Nazi weapons law, and he had the State Department actually translate it into English for him, and we copied it almost verbatim, some parts of it almost verbatim, and it's absolutely frightening. And it was 23 years after World War II ended, and here we are copying the Nazis. I mean, what are we, as they say in Spanish, Meshuggah?
Well, you know, I mean, that was so bold and so clear, and I distributed and actually sold many of them. I did a lot of public speaking, and it was just shocking. It was shocking to me to see how blatant it was at first. And then, you know, I think Moses, wasn't it Moses who was the head of the NRA for a while?
Yeah,
he actually was in favor of the 1968 law. Some people say he changed, but, you know, I ended up leaving that organization for a number of reasons, I think very good reasons. But what I noticed about Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership, JPFO.org, is that no matter – never an attempt to be politically correct, but to be factually and morally correct. Bold, courageous, and non-compromising, and that's what drew me to you guys.
Kevin, there's a lot of people, though, and I'm not here to speak in favor or against, or neither to defend nor to condemn any other organization, because Zig Ziglar said when you throw dirt, you're just losing ground. But by the same token, there have been a lot of people who have been anti-gun and then, you know, had their conversion experience, if you will. One of them is Sadie Froman, who's a former president of the NRA, was relatively anti-gun, and then one of her friends got raped. She realized, and she lived in San Francisco, and she ended up becoming a gun owner and a firearms instructor and then president of NRA. Paxton Quigley, who wrote Armed and Female and Not an Easy Target, and is now a firearms instructor in New York City, of all places.
Yeah.
And she was in favor. She worked in favor of the 68 GCA, and she's become pro-gun. And so there's a lot of people that, shall we say, convert.
Yes, and you know, and I think that we need to always be willing to do that. I'm trying to convert people. You know, some say, why do you attack the NRA? I'm not really. I left it when they, you know, their Institute for Legislative Action came out and endorsed a guy running against Congressman Ron Paul. That was like the final straw when they said, well, we're not going to call for the dismantling of federal gun control laws, just no more new ones. And I say, you know what, they're unconstitutional. Let's get rid of them.
Well, we've been doing that in Arizona. Arizona is not we've been doing to the anti-freedom bigots. And by the way, people who are against your right to keep and bear arms are against your fundamental right, according to District of Columbia versus Heller in out of the Supreme Court in 2008. So they're against your fundamental rights. Well, we call people that make a decision against your rights in advance of your freedom, those are called bigots.
Yes.
So we rightly call people who are anti-RKBA, we call them anti-freedom bigots. And the people who want to take away your rights don't do it instantly. They do it one thing at a time.
Yep.
Well, that's the model we've taken to get our rights back in Arizona. And we've been steadily, for the last 6 years since the formation of the Arizona Citizens Defense League, marching towards getting our rights back. We now have constitutional carry. The Arizona Constitution is our carry permit. We no longer need a permit slip from the governors.
We're going to be right back. Charles, thank you, and give us a call. All right, I want to continue along that line. I love one of the photographs from your website. Here you are standing next to a sign on the street that says firearms weapons prohibited, and you're there with looks like a Revolutionary War musket. And see, that's
it's a LaBelle French pattern 1775 69 caliber smoothbore circa 1775, and I do have a fixed bayonet, and I'm pointing it at the sign. Eventually, we were able to get that sign, those signs taken down. We did it in an incremental process where at first we were successful in saying that if you had a concealed weapons permit, you could be in the parks in Arizona with a concealed weapons permit. You couldn't, the state didn't regulate parks, but cities could. And in our constitutional carry bill last year, we were able to get that knocked out, and now all the animals are finally equal. Some are no longer more equal than others.
Right.
Now if you have a sidearm and you want to take your family for a picnic, or for that matter, a long arm, and you want to walk into the park with a long arm, you can, as long as it's in a holster or scabbard or on a sling, and you're not doing anything wrong with it, you're perfectly free to have it.
Well, I mean, I think you call those people citizens. I'm thinking about just some history. Most people are aware of what happened in Germany, and which spread into other nations. And we saw people being let off, all kinds of people, way out of proportion, 6 million, 7 million, I don't know how many people who were Jewish, as well as many others.
Right.
Because they were
dishonored. Probably an equal number of others. We should not forget that.
And they're all humans. They're all, you know, the Holocaust to me is that government in the last century, government murdered over 100 million of its people. And every every life was created by God. We're all made in God's image, and it's tragic. And yet there was some resistance in Warsaw. Was that because 10,000 Jewish militants finally stood up, or what happened? How did they hold off those people?
It was a small handful, and pardon me for forgetting the fellow's name who was the hero of the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising. I can see it. The Rabbi Ben-Dori and I had a discussion about it last week, and I'm sorry I don't remember the gentleman's name, but it was a very small number of people. There's less than 20 Jews who, during the Warsaw Uprising, who held off a division of the Waffen-SS with 9 guns.
And what's the lesson for us today? In other words, I'm thinking, if the Jewish people had never registered their weapons, would the Holocaust have taken place, or would there have been enough resistance?
But there would have been. But had we maintained a culture, of freedom, and every time they tried to haul people away, they'd been met with a hail of gunfire, I suspect it would have severely cut back on the number of people who had died. I suspect there has still been a Holocaust, but you wouldn't have had trains full of people who willingly went.
Yeah.
Which is what you did have. By the way, have you been to the Holocaust Museum?
No, I haven't.
In Washington, D.C. If you go there, it's absolutely stunning to go there. They have some of the actual rail cars that were used to transport Jews to the concentration camp. And part of the, it, you start out, you take an elevator to the seventh floor, and then you walk down a spiral set of, it's not stairs, it's just a spiral set of ramps that go down seven flights. You see all these exhibits on different floors. And one of the exhibits is they have you walk through the car, the actual car, one of the actual cars that was used to transport the Jews to their death in the concentration camps. If you want a completely creepy feeling, go there when there's not a lot of people and stand still by yourself in the car. I've done that. And it makes you want to scream and run out of the car.
You know, yeah, I haven't had an opportunity to do that. I've been to Washington once and do want to go back again. I'm thinking, though, the principles, it's as if we have not learned anything. You know, because we see this continuing today even here. Okay, where do our rights come from?
God.
And now, why are so many people saying that we get them from, you know, the Constitution? I mean,
well, you understand that there's something important going on here, Kevin, and that's that statists believe that your rights are software, and they're installed by the government. And people who are freedomists, libertarians, constitutional conservatives, believe that your rights are hardware, that you're equipped with them. That you're born with your rights and you come into them when you come into your majority. So, you know, if you're of the model that the statist model where the state installs your rights at some point in time, whatever that arbitrary point might be, well, then you must also believe that the state can remove or limit those rights at whim for the good of the state, for the greater good of the greater number of people. And of course, you can also regulate them from each according to his means to each according to his needs.
Right. Well, when I look at people who have the mindset, even good people who say, you know, we get our rights from the Bill of Rights, that would relegate them to privileges. If it's granted by the state, it can be revoked. If we look to the God of the Bible as the author of our rights, our liberties, and then we can say, okay, government was instituted by God to be a righteous deacon or servant of God. And when it goes beyond that, who are we obligated to, the God or the government? And it seems like it becomes very confusing there because we have a mindset that we're supposed to respect government. And so if they pass laws against our right to protect ourselves, do we have to submit to that?
No, it's a lot of, especially from the Jewish point of view, there's a lot of precedent. You know, it's godly to be honest with people, but there's no obligation to be honest with someone who wants to kill you.
Yes.
Or for that matter, to be honest with someone who wants to diminish your rights. Some people call that situational ethics, but it actually isn't because my ethics don't change. They're the same all the time, but they apply differently to different people. You know, I look at it as analogous to a situation in the military. We're under the Uniform Code of Military Justice. And I want to say, I never served in the military. I don't want to intimate that I did. But under the UCMJ, you are required to follow orders unless that order is an unlawful one. And then you're required to disobey it. And that codifies what I believe should happen in real life with our government. You know, if you look at laws that were immoral and wrong, like Rosa Parks ignored, and the law changed.
You have been successful in Arizona. A lot of people think there's nothing we can do. What would you tell people in the other states to begin doing? You said incrementally to restore those God-given rights protected by the Bill of Rights. Where do they begin?
Well, first of all, seek out and see if there's an organization that fits your parameters for what you'd like to accomplish. I will tell you, usually there is. Nationally, there's the Heritage Foundation, and in individual states, you have organizations that are affiliated or aligned with Heritage. And in Kentucky, you have the Bluegrass Institute. In Arizona, you have the Goldwater Institute. Now, the Goldwater Institute's founded along the principles of Barry Goldwater, who was a liberty-leaning constitutional conservative. And The Goldwater Institute has within it a division. It's called the Scharf Norton Center for Constitutional Litigation, and it is exactly what it is. Are you with me?
I am with you. I don't know what that is. My engineer is looking around. You still there?
Okay. Anyway, they have a the Scharf Norton Center for Constitutional Litigation, and what that does is it when the government steps out of line with the Arizona Constitution, the Goldwater Institute, if they can't resolve it some other way, files suit in against government in the Arizona court system, and they recently got a decision. What happened was the city of Phoenix had taken away, or attempted to eminent domain seize a property and give it to another corporation. Well, you can't do that. That's called the corporate gifts clause of the Arizona Constitution. You can't do that. They recently got a stopped $100 million project of the city of Phoenix because they were violating the Constitution. So what I would tell people is find organizations like Goldwater in your state, and if you can't find one, found one. And they even in southern Arizona, we have some special lunacy that goes on here in terms of politics. There's a number of people that formed not an affiliate, but a similar organization to Goldwater in the southern half of the state because they didn't think that Goldwater could help them enough, so they applied the same principles. And they're going after the city of Tucson's government when they're being terribly unfriendly to business and they're doing it in unconstitutional ways. They go to court and they do what the left has done in this country for the last 40 years, is use the legal system to sue the government into submission.
All righty. Now I want to continue with JPFO.
All right.
You have some amazing materials, and some people, though, I mean, they're just shocked.
Some of the names are kind of stunning.
Okay, so you have a documentary,
uh-huh.
No Guns for Negroes. You have
right.
a documentary. Nick just looked up. He's saying, wait a minute.
No Guns for Jews.
And No Guns for Jews. So you know, and Nick's getting a little worried there. But maybe Nick should be worried, because what is some of the history on gun control as it would apply to Jews and Negroes?
Well, the history of mass murder is a history of disarmament first. And you saw it throughout the 20th century in many of the slaughter of Armenians. It wasn't just Jews. You know, we don't have a monopoly on getting killed. There's a lot of other peoples that have been exterminated. And the first act of extermination is always first registration and then confiscation of all different types of arms. You know, it's not just firearms. It's swords. It's knives. New York City is the freedom side of in New York City is fighting a pitched battle against Cyrus Vance Jr., the county attorney, the city attorney in New York City, who thinks that a pocket knife is a dangerous thing.
Yeah.
And now people are getting stopped and frisked and arrested for having a switchblade if they have a knife that clips to their pocket. It's considered probable cause for a stop. And, you know, so there's encroachments on freedom wherever you go in terms of weapons. Anyway, to go back to your point, your question, not to wander off, the movie No Guns for Negroes shows the racist history of gun control. We didn't have a gun control law. Well, the early gun control laws in the United States, before we were even a country, required you to have guns.
Yeah.
Massachusetts required you to have a gun. Would that it would today.
Part of the militia.
Case, yeah, exactly. And after the Civil War, you saw a tremendous amount of gun control laws rise up, especially about carrying concealed weapons. Well, they were not enforced against white people. They were only enforced against people of color. And this should enrage people in Chicago, like Otis McDonald, should be enraged at the idea that in minority areas, those laws still obtain. It's
Washington, D.C., and you see how many people are victims of violence because we've disarmed people that we defined as racial, ethnic minorities. We've disarmed them, and they become the biggest victim class of violent crime.
And by the way, we're not just saying this. There's a lot of evidence of it. The city of Baltimore has a tremendous violence problem. And the newspaper there, the Baltimore Sun, printed a map where the violence is, and they also did a map where they had the violence by ethnic origin. And it was kind of a mistake on the part of the left, because they admitted that the minority community, much of the minority community, predates upon itself.
Right.
And if you would allow people to be armed and trained, you would solve a lot of that problem.
Right.
You're never going to make crime go away. But I have a statement. It's my own personal one. I call it yo-yo and yo-yor. Yo-yo is you're on your own. And yo-yor is you own your own result.
That's right.
And if you don't have the tools of preparedness, you are neither.
You know, and I think we have a responsibility, especially as the head of households, to
yep.
be able to protect ourselves, our family, our community. I remember when I was a Los Angeles police officer, the reason I resonated with Richard Stevens when he wrote that book, you know, that you got
dial 911 and die.
It's because I saw that as a reality. I knew how often we got to the scene and we were able to take the reports. We were able to help the victim be picked up by the coroner or by the ambulance, but we could not be there. The people had a responsibility to defend themselves. And so many people, especially in my life, more out of proportion women, I mean, good women, they don't want a weapon in their home. And because they think, well, all I got to do is call the police if someone's battering us down. And it's just not the reality.
Well, when seconds count, the police are only minutes away.
Yeah, that's right. And that's if you're lucky, you know, depending on the situation.
Well,
and,
it really doesn't matter. When seconds count, the police are minutes away.
Yeah, seconds count. And another thing that, and I don't know how much you guys will be looking at this as an organization, I have a very real concern. I see a growing police state, and I've seen a change in local law enforcement from locally controlled officers who should keep the peace to becoming more militarized, more federalized, and they're almost becoming, you know, ominous. And more, as William Norman Grigg is documenting fairly regularly, they are the author of abuse more and more. And that's not an indictment against all law enforcement, but it is a very real growing change, and I think it's becoming very ominous. Before we go into break, just briefly, I'd like you to tell us why some people ought to go to your website and consider joining your organization.
Why people should join?
Yeah.
Well, JPFO is a 501c3. We're an educational organization, and we point out things that people don't know, like the origin of the 68 Gun Control Act being the Nazi Weapons Act. We have movies like No Guns for Jews and No Guns for Negroes and Innocence Betrayed that show people, especially people who, you know, people who normally wouldn't be friendly to the right to keep and bear arms, why it's so vital. And it helps fund those projects. It helps us reach out, especially in the Jewish community. You know, a lot of the people who really are big in gun control in the national scene are Jewish. And it's a disgrace. Help us educate those people.
Oh.
Or at least help us educate the people around them and the people who listen to them, so that when they hear them make a statement about the evil of people being armed, they're laughed at. You know, ridicule is a magnificent way of maintaining freedom. Help us ridicule the people that richly deserve it.
I want to encourage you folks to join as I have, because it gives you access to some amazing resources. They are a 501c3, so they're not going to lobby, tell you who to vote for, but they're educating people to the principles that allow us to maintain liberty. And it's an important aspect, our right to defend ourselves, our homes, our communities, way beyond recreation, way beyond food. And ultimately, if we have to water the blood of liberty, the tree of liberty, with blood, we have to be armed to do it, so that the tyrants don't rule. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. The Right Source. Charles, I'm really interested in, we had you here because of JPFO, but a lot of the type of people who listen to our kind of radio are willing to go outside the broadcast area, and so much, fortunately, because of technology, podcasting, this show will be available for, you know, for months and months. But you also broadcast there in Arizona, and I know it's available online.
Yeah.
Where would the people go? Because I know you have archive shows, too,
right,
and part of your program. It's an interesting selection, but has to do, you know, with liberty.
LibertyWatchRadio.com is my website. If you add /listen, you'll find the last 6 months of my program. If you have LibertyWatchRadio.com and you add /archive, you get some of the golden oldies. I go after the guests that you don't usually hear on talk radio. For instance, I had the vice chairman of the Joint Chiefs on for a whole hour. Admiral Jim Bastiani. CNN wouldn't get him for 7 minutes. Yeah. I interviewed Colonel Lee Archer, one of the original Tuskegee Airmen. I interviewed Joe Foss, who'd been on the radio plenty of times. He's not that rare. He's passed on now, but Medal of Honor holder. I interviewed a guy by the name of Bob Pardo. Have you ever heard of Pardo's Push?
Ooh, I'm not sure.
Pardo's Push is in March of 1967. You had a flight of F-4 Phantoms that got shot up pretty badly over North Vietnam after bombing a power plant in Hanoi. And one of them was about to, he'd been shot through the wings and lost most of his fuel and was about to bail out over the area he'd just bombed. And Pardo just couldn't conscience that. And I'll tell you the story very, very briefly. What he did was he had Earl Amon lower his tail hook, and he stuck the windshield of his F-4 in his wingman's tail hook and pushed him 88 miles into Laos.
Are you serious?
And he had no idea whether his windshield could withstand 30,000 pounds of stress plus the tensile strength to push the other aircraft.
Yeah.
And the windshield began to stress fracture during the push. And I mean, it's a 15-minute story to tell it to you, but this guy tells it himself. And because he lost his own airplane doing it, he ran himself out of fuel and cost himself the airplane. For doing that, the Air Force offered to court-martial him.
Yeah.
And Colonel Robin Olds offered to put him up for the Medal of Honor. And he made a deal with the command structure in Vietnam and said, I won't put him up for the Medal of Honor if you don't court-martial him. And they said, deal. He never got anything for it. But it's a world-famous thing. You can hear Bob Pardo on my program, on the podcast, talking about Pardo's Push. I mean, there's stuff like that on there. And I dig. I'm not a great host, but I'm an excellent producer. And the program is made in the producing.
Yep.
And I know how to dig these people out of the woodwork and get them on the radio. And I got to tell you that there's some fascinating stuff on there, not because I'm a good host, but because they're great guests.
Hey, that's what I like to do as well. You know, it's so much more. I don't have to be an expert in everything. If I can get access to people who have a story to tell, who are involved in, you know, I mean, we're liberty-minded oriented.
Right.
And that, you know, getting them so that people are aware of them, because the national media, now, you know, the national media is on the other side. They're just another arm of the government, in my view. They've given up their responsibility. And even a lot of the so-called conservative Republican radio, in my view, has done the same thing. The Internet has given us a technological window of opportunity to get the truth out, you know, bypass all of them. And that means, folks, you got to tell people about shows like The Right Source and about Liberty Watch, radio.com.
Right, and America Armed and Free, which is the last hour of the program. But, yeah, libertywatchradio.com is where you find it. And if you put after.com, put /archive, you get the last 6 months. Well, you get the best of. One of the other ones I so treasure is I interviewed two of the 13 men who captured the U-505 on June the 2nd of 1944 off the Azores. It had been the last time an American commander gave the command away borders was in 1814 when the Constitution captured Levant and Siam. Until 1944. I interviewed the guys that took those orders and went out and captured an enemy submarine on the high seas and kept it from sinking. And it's a fascinating story. If you want to hear stuff like that, libertywatchradio.com/archive. There's some fascinating stuff on there.
You may be one of the fans then, I guess, of military history on cable.
I don't have a television.
Wow.
I don't have a cable connection hooked to a TV. I have a DVD player and a TV for that, but I don't have an antenna. I can't get cable. I don't get cable, and I can't get broadcast TV. I don't have time. As soon as I hang up with you, I got another 234 pages to read in the book for an interview I'm doing tomorrow. So I don't know where in the world people have time to watch television.
Well,
unless they're unproductive.
You know what? We have found, because we have not been big television watchers, but now because of technology, we save some shows. We didn't have cable up until... I really needed it to broadcast from my home studio instead of driving to a station when some of the new technology came. I couldn't get ISDN, but the fiber optics made it better. And so part of a package, you get this access to TV. And we just save the shows we want, and I can go to the military channel or the history channel, save something, and then on my own time I can look at that. But I get what you're talking about.
Oh, I have cable. I just don't hook it up.
Yeah.
I have it in the box, but I don't bother to. I don't have an antenna going to a television. I don't even have time to hook it up.
Yes.
I mean, my desk is a mess right now because I've got it stacked high with books to read for radio, and then I like to read on top of it. I read a book a week for radio, sometimes two, and then my all my journals, Proceedings, the Naval Institute magazine, Naval History, the Guns and Ammo, American Rifleman, and some of the other pubs I read, like Air and Space Smithsonian. Who the Hades has time?
Well, we're not a reading society anymore, and that's unfortunate for us. So,
well,
you know,
I'm a journalist,
yeah,
and I'm expected to do research. I don't just come to an audience and say and read something out of a newspaper over the radio. I mean, what information is that? I go to places that, you know, I go to the submarines that are on. I've been to 19 of the 25 submarines that are on display in the United States. When I finish that, I'm going to go to all four of the battleships, the Wisconsin, the Missouri. Well, I've been to the Missouri, and got to go over to New Jersey and see the New Jersey. I've been to these places, and when I finish with my ships, I'm going to start on Civil War battlefields.
Yeah.
And I'm going to become a subject expert. I've read dozens of books on the Civil War. I'm currently slogging through my dad's copy of Douglas Southall Freeman's History of the Civil War from the South, from the point of view of the South, called Lee's Lieutenants. And I'm going to make myself a subject expert on it.
Well, you know, there's a point of view that calls it the War of Northern Aggression.
Oh, and I don't disagree. One of the things I love about living in Arizona is that we were part of the Confederacy.
Yeah.
I'm a Confederate. I'm not in favor of slavery, but I am a Confederate.
Well, so many people don't see that Lincoln really was responsible for the end of federalism, the concept.
Right.
He eviscerated the Bill of Rights. He got rid of habeas corpus. I mean, sometimes we forget those aspects.
Lincoln was our worst president, and that's heresy to a lot of people. But
yeah,
we worship him just because he got shot, and that's a false that's false worship, in my opinion. But anyway, but
that's off topic. But anyway,
right.
I can see that at least you're looking at, you know, which we're supposed to do. We want to try to find the truth, and it takes digging. You don't usually get it with just a surface level glance.
Yeah, and if you work in radio and you're working it right, you end up becoming a polymath anyway. So, anyway.
Listen, we're coming to close of the hour, but I want, as briefly as possible, just because of time, where is the greatest threat to liberty coming from? And on the future, we'll discuss it more, what we do about it, but where do you see it coming from?
Ignorance. We have people today that don't know when the Civil War occurred. They don't understand history. People who think that President Obama has a stash of money he can give away at will. I mean, we have the body politic in America today is largely ignorant. As long as they can get the download of the song they want from iTunes,
yeah,
they're happy. And that's wrong. I mean, fine, enjoy your iTunes all you want, but download a copy of the Constitution. Every American, every prospective American, ought to have a copy of the Constitution and his state constitution in his iPhone or his iPod or his sauropod or whatever he carries around with him, and he ought to read it occasionally. And he ought to understand, when you look to vote for a person in office who's a prospective, who's asking to be hired, you need to ask him, and you need to be familiar with it. What is the purpose of government in according to your state constitution? And if your prospective hire can't answer that question, they're fired.
Yeah.
It's real simple. In Arizona, it's in Article 2, Section 2 of the Constitution, and it says the purpose of government is to protect the rights of the individual and that all power is inherent in the people. Government exists to protect those rights. And if you can't say that in two sentences, you don't understand your own government. And you don't qualify to vote until you understand your government. That's where the danger is. It's in the ignorance of the individual.
I agree. Ignorant and free can never be, right?
That's right.
And that's the reason that the organizations like JPFO.org exist, or JPFO.org, that's where we want you to go. They are producing the materials so that we can educate people. And I want to thank Charles for being with us. I want to encourage you to go to libertywatchradio.com, and hopefully we can have discussions in the future. I am a member of JPFO. I encourage you to at least take a serious look at it. And
JPFO.org.
JPFO.org. All right. God bless, my friend, and
you too.
We'll talk to you in the future.
As they say in Spanish, as hay gesund.
All righty. Angawa uno todo, vivi uno jumbo la bamba.